Chapter 64. Once upon a time there dwelt, in a narrow street on the Surrey side of the water, within 3 minutes' walk of Old London Bridge, Mr. Joseph Tuggs, a little dark-faced man, with shiny hair, twinkling eyes, short legs, and a body of very considerable thickness, measuring from the center button of his waistcoat in front, to the ornamental buttons of his coat behind. The figure of the amiable Mrs. Tuggs, if not perfectly symmetrical, was decidedly comfortable, and the form of her only daughter, the accomplished Miss Charlotte Tuggs, was fast ripening into that state of luxuriant plumpness which had enchanted the eyes and captivated the heart of Mr. Joseph Tuggs in his earlier days. Mr. Simon Tuggs, his only son, and Miss Charlotte Tuggs' only brother, was as differently formed in body, as he was differently constituted in mind, from the remainder of his family. There was that elongation in his thoughtful face, and that tendency to weakness in his interesting legs, which tell so forcibly of a great mind and romantic disposition. The slightest traits of character in such a being possess no mean interest to speculative minds. He usually appeared in public in capacious shoes with black cotton stockings, and was observed to be particularly attached to a black glazed stock without tie or ornament of any description. There is perhaps no profession, however useful, no pursuit, however meritorious, which can escape the petty attacks of vulgar minds. Mr. Joseph Tuggs was a grocer. It might be supposed that a grocer was beyond the breath of calumny, but no, the neighbors stigmatized him as a chandler, and the poisonous voice of envy distinctly asserted that he dispensed tea and coffee by the quartern, retailed sugar by the ounce, cheese by the slice, tobacco by the screw, and butter by the pat. These taunts, however, were lost upon the Tuggses. Mr. Tuggs attended to the grocery department, Mrs. Tuggs to the cheesemongery, and Miss Tuggs to her education. Mr. Simon Tuggs kept his father's books and his own counsel. One fine spring afternoon, the latter gentleman was seated on a tub of weekly Dorset, behind the little red desk with a wooden rail, which ornamented a corner of the counter, when a stranger dismounted from a cab and hastily entered the shop. He was habited in black cloth, and bore with him a green umbrella and a blue bag. Apostrophe Mr. Tuggs? Apostrophe, said the stranger, inquiringly. My name is Tuggs, apostrophe, replied Mr. Simon. It's the other Mr. Tuggs, apostrophe, said the stranger, looking towards the glass door which led into the parlor behind the shop, and on the inside of which the round face of Mr. Tuggs, senior, was distinctly visible, peeping over the curtain. Mr. Simon gracefully waved his pen, as if in intimation of his wish that his father would advance. Mr. Joseph Tuggs, with considerable celerity, removed his face from the curtain and placed it before the stranger. I come from the Temple, apostrophe, said the man with the bag. From the Temple, apostrophe, said Mrs. Tuggs, flinging open the door of the little parlor and disclosing Miss Tuggs in perspective. From the Temple, apostrophe, said Miss Tuggs and Mr. Simon Tuggs at the same moment. From the Temple, apostrophe, said Mr. Joseph Tuggs, turning as pale as a Dutch cheese. From the Temple, apostrophe, repeated the man with the bag. From Mr. Cowers, the solicitors. Mr. Tuggs, I congratulate you, sir. Ladies, I wish you joy of your prosperity. We have been successful. Apostrophe, and the man with the bag leisurely divested himself of his umbrella and glove, as a preliminary to shaking hands with Mr. Joseph Tuggs. Now the words "we have been successful," apostrophe, had no sooner issued from the mouth of the man with the bag than Mr. Simon Tuggs rose from the tub of weekly Dorset, opened his eyes very wide, gasped for breath, made figures of eight in the air with his pen, and finally fell into the arms of his anxious mother, and fainted away without the slightest ostensible cause or pretense. Water! Apostrophe, screamed Mrs. Tuggs. Look up, my son, apostrophe exclaimed Mr. Tugs. Simon, dear Simon, apostrophe shrieked Miss Tugs. I'm better now, apostrophe said Mr. Simon Tugs. What? Successful. Apostrophe and then, as corroborative evidence of his being better, he fainted away again, and was borne into the little parlor by the united efforts of the remainder of the family, and the man with the bag. To a casual spectator, or to anyone unacquainted with the position of the family, this fainting would have been unaccountable. To those who understood the mission of the man with the bag, and were moreover acquainted with the excitability of the nerves of Mr. Simon Tugs, it was quite comprehensible. A long-pending lawsuit respecting the validity of a will had been unexpectedly decided, and Mr. Joseph Tugs was the possessor of £20,000. A prolonged consultation took place that night in the little parlor, a consultation that was to settle the future destinies of the Tuggses. The shop was shut up at an unusually early hour, and many were the unavailing kicks bestowed upon the closed door by applicants for quarterns of sugar, or half quarterns of bread, or pennyworths of pepper, which were to have been left till Saturday, apostrophe, but which fortune had decreed were to be left alone altogether. We must certainly give up business, apostrophe said Miss Tugs. Oh, decidedly, apostrophe said Mrs. Tugs. Simon shall go to the bar, apostrophe said Mr. Joseph Tugs. And I shall always sign myself Simon in future, apostrophe said his son. And I shall call myself Charlotta, apostrophe said Miss Tugs. And you must always call me Ma, and Father, Pa, apostrophe said Mrs. Tugs. Yes, and Pa must leave off all his vulgar habits, apostrophe interposed Miss Tugs. I'll take care of all that, apostrophe responded Mr. Joseph Tugs, complacently. He was, at that very moment, eating pickled salmon with a pocket knife. We must leave town immediately, apostrophe said Mr. Simon Tugs. Everybody concurred that this was an indispensable preliminary to being genteel. The question then arose, where should they go? Gravesend? Apostrophe mildly suggested Mr. Joseph Tugs. The idea was unanimously scouted. Gravesend was low. Margate? Apostrophe insinuated Mrs. Tugs. Worse and worse, nobody there, but tradespeople. Brighton? Apostrophe Mr. Simon Tugs opposed an insurmountable objection. All the coaches had been upset, in turn, within the last 3 weeks. Each coach had averaged 2 passengers killed, and 6 wounded, and, in every case, the newspapers had distinctly understood that no blame, whatever, was attributable to the coachman. Apostrophe, Ramsgate? Apostrophe ejaculated Mr. Simon, thoughtfully. To be sure, how stupid they must have been, not to have thought of that before. Ramsgate was just the place of all others. 2 months after this conversation, the City of London Ramsgate steamer was running gaily down the river. Her flag was flying, her band was playing, her passengers were conversing. Everything about her seemed gay and lively. No wonder the Tuggses were on board. Charming, ain't it? Apostrophe said Mr. Joseph Tugs, in a bottle green greatcoat, with a velvet collar of the same, and a blue traveling cap with a gold band. Soul-inspiring, apostrophe replied Mr. Simon Tugs. He was entered at the bar. Soul-inspiring. Apostrophe, delightful morning, sir. Apostrophe said a stoutish, military-looking gentleman in a blue shirt out buttoned up to his chin, and white trousers chained down to the soles of his boots. Mr. Simon Tugs took upon himself the responsibility of answering the observation. Heavenly! Apostrophe, he replied. You are an enthusiastic admirer of the beauties of nature, sir? Apostrophe said the military gentleman. I am, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Simon Tugs. Traveled much, sir? Apostrophe inquired the military gentleman. Not much, apostrophe replied Mr. Simon Tugs. You've been on the continent, of course? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired the military gentleman. Not exactly, apostrophe replied Mr. Simon Tuggs in a qualified tone, as if he wished it to be implied that he had gone halfway and come back again. You of course intend your son to make the grand tour, sir? Apostrophe apostrophe said the military gentleman, addressing Mr. Joseph Tuggs. As Mr. Joseph Tuggs did not precisely understand what the grand tour was, or how such an article was manufactured, he replied, of course. Apostrophe just as he said the word, there came tripping up, from her seat at the stern of the vessel, a young lady in a puce-colored silk cloak, and boots of the same, with long black ringlets, large black eyes, brief petticoats, and unexceptionable ankles. Walter, my dear, apostrophe said the young lady to the military gentleman. Yes, Belinda, my love, apostrophe responded the military gentleman to the black-eyed young lady. What have you left me alone so long for? Apostrophe apostrophe said the young lady. I have been stared out of countenance by those rude young men. Apostrophe, what? Stared at? Apostrophe exclaimed the military gentleman, with an emphasis which made Mr. Simon Tuggs withdraw his eyes from the young lady's face with inconceivable rapidity. Which young men were? Apostrophe apostrophe and the military gentleman clenched his fist, and glared fearfully on the cigar smokers around. Be calm, Walter, I entreat, apostrophe said the young lady. I won't, apostrophe said the military gentleman. Do, sir, apostrophe interposed Mr. Simon Tuggs. They ain't worth your notice. Apostrophe, no no they are not, indeed, apostrophe urged the young lady. I will be calm, apostrophe said the military gentleman. You speak truly, sir. I thank you for a timely remonstrance, which may have spared me the guilt of manslaughter. Apostrophe calming his wrath, the military gentleman wrung Mr. Simon Tuggs by the hand. My sister, sir. Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Simon Tuggs, seeing that the military gentleman was casting an admiring look towards Miss Charlotta. My wife, ma'am, Mrs. Captain Waters, apostrophe said the military gentleman, presenting the black-eyed young lady. My mother, ma'am, Mrs. Tuggs, apostrophe said Mr. Simon. The military gentleman and his wife murmured enchanting courtesies, and the Tuggses looked as unembarrassed as they could. Walter, my dear, apostrophe said the black-eyed young lady, after they had sat chatting with the Tuggses some half hour. Yes, my love, apostrophe said the military gentleman. Don't you think this gentleman, with an inclination of the head towards Mr. Simon Tuggs, is very much like the Marquis Carowini? Apostrophe apostrophe, Lord bless me, very. Apostrophe apostrophe said the military gentleman. It struck me, the moment I saw him, apostrophe said the young lady, gazing intently, and with a melancholy air, on the scarlet countenance of Mr. Simon Tuggs. Mr. Simon Tuggs looked at everybody, and finding that everybody was looking at him, appeared to feel some temporary difficulty in disposing of his eyesight. So exactly the air of the Marquis, apostrophe said the military gentleman. Quite extraordinary. Apostrophe apostrophe sighed the military gentleman's lady. You don't know the Marquis, sir? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired the military gentleman. Mr. Simon Tuggs stammered a negative. If you did, apostrophe continued Captain Walter Waters, you would feel how much reason you have to be proud of the resemblance a most elegant man, with a most prepossessing appearance. Apostrophe, he is indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe exclaimed Belinda Waters energetically. As her eye caught that of Mr. Simon Tuggs, she withdrew it from his features in bashful confusion. All this was highly gratifying to the feelings of the Tuggses, And when, in the course of farther conversation, it was discovered that Miss Charlotta Tuggs was the facsimile of a titled relative of Mrs. Belinda Waters, and that Mrs. Tuggs herself was the very picture of the Dowager Duchess of Doppleton, their delight in the acquisition of so genteel and friendly an acquaintance knew no bounds. Even the dignity of Captain Walter Waters relaxed to that degree that he suffered himself to be prevailed upon by Mr. Joseph Tuggs to partake of cold pigeon pie and sherry on deck, and a most delightful conversation, aided by these agreeable stimulants, was prolonged until they ran alongside Ramsgate Pier. "Goodbye, dear," said Mrs. Captain Waters to Miss Charlotta Tuggs, just before the bustle of landing commenced. "We shall see you on the sands in the morning, and, as we are sure to have found lodgings before then, I hope we shall be inseparables for many weeks to come." "I hope so," said Miss Charlotta Tuggs, emphatically. "Tickets, ladies and gentlemen," said the man on the paddle box. "Want a porter, sir?" inquired a dozen men in smock frocks. "Now, my dear," said Captain Waters. "Goodbye," said Mrs. Captain Waters. "Goodbye, Mr. Simon," and with a pressure of the hand which threw the amiable young man's nerves into a state of considerable derangement, Mrs. Captain Waters disappeared among the crowd. A pair of puce-colored boots were seen ascending the steps, a white handkerchief fluttered, a black eye gleamed. The Waterses were gone, and Mr. Simon Tuggs was Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.